You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
To 90 Day Soulmate. Today we have an interesting show. It's called Are We Losing Our Minds and Our Souls? How social media, AI, and modern life are rewiring who we are, subtly and quietly in the background, like a ninja. We don't see it coming. But I think there are the obvious signs. For instance, the core theme of today's show. Modern society may be increasing convenience, connectivity between us all, validation and support of each other, credentialing or giving diplomas, support systems for people out there, and automation while simultaneously reducing opportunities to develop competence, resilience, self-reliance, character, meaning, and deep human connection. The more electronic ways we have to communicate, the less face-to-face, person-to-person connection we have. Today, we're going to talk about competence versus credentials. We're going to talk about the expectation gap, the difference between what you expect and what reality is. We're going to talk about social comparison theory and a lot more. Let's get right into it. We're going to ask a question that sounds dramatic, but perhaps it isn't. Are we losing our minds? And our souls. We have more technology, more convenience, more information than ever before. And this connectivity that we have puts us way ahead of any generation in the past, in history, at any time, as far as we know, unless there are past civilizations we don't know about. But that's a different type of show. Yet anxiety, loneliness, depression, and dissatisfaction continue to rise. Over the last 20 years, the amount of anxiety has doubled. Depression has doubled. Anxiety and depression and this just creates this. It's almost like a, I'll call it a social contagion. The more stress we have, the more we're unable to meet our own expectations, the more we see people on social media providing their best pictures, their best situations out there, and we see them and we fail in comparison to achieve the lifestyle of those that we are using as our influencers. And I'm not saying all of us do this, but many of us do. The more anxiety, more depressed we get. In fact, the more time somebody spends on social media, the more likely they will say that they have anxiety or depression. So today, we're up to about 7 hours, and we've talked about this in the past as well. Today's youth spend about 7 hours on social media per day. It's not per week, per day. That's more time than they spend with their parents, their friends, or at school, and that's on average. So what if the issue isn't what we've gained, but what we've quietly lost? Remember that ninja sneaking in the background, taking stuff away from us. For most of human history, our personalities, values, our resilience and relationships were shaped by family, by friends, by community, by religion, by hardship, by responsibility, for the things that we had to overcome. Face-to-face interaction. Today, increasingly, they're shaped by screens, algorithms, influencers, and artificial intelligence. So again, tonight's question is simple. We have more technology than any generation in history. We have more information. We have more convenience. We have more degrees, and we have more therapy, and we have more medication, and we have more connectivity. Yet we also have more loneliness, more anxiety, more depression, more dissatisfaction, and more relationship instability. How can both be true? All these people that are much smarter have more connectivity, but yet feel lonelier and have worse relationships. Have we become better at recognizing problems and therefore we need to solve them? Or have we unintentionally removed many of the experiences that historically built competence, confidence, resilience, and strong relationships? That's what we want to talk about today. So this huge contradiction, let's begin with this paradox, right? Education attainment has increased dramatically over the last 20, 30 years. In fact, the number of people who are getting 2- and 4-year degrees has doubled since 20, 30 years ago. It isn't really a discussion about education. It's discussion about capability. Are they getting the education? Are they getting the degree? Are they getting the credential? Are they becoming competent? Throughout history, competence was built through the effort, through mastery, failure, and persistence, trying and trying and struggling. The question is whether modern institutions are still producing those outcomes. And with more and more students being accepted into higher education and more programs developed for students who traditionally may not have gone to college but have been pushed in that direction, more students are going to college. But at the same time, lower level competencies had not been built. In fact, those have dropped. So first generation in the last, I don't know, many generations where the general level of intelligence, as indicated by intelligence tests, as indicated by reading, comprehension, and mathematic ability, have become lower. Now, that can be, you know, COVID related, that can be social media has driven people away, that can be, oh, the computer's doing the work for me, so I don't need to. That can also be social programs that have pushed for people to move to the next grade, people to move to the next class, people to be recognized and get awards, even though they haven't gotten the achievement. So we thought that by telling people, you're the best, you can do anything you want, you're incredible, that that would build self-esteem and therefore they would become competent. And it turns out that building competence first builds self-esteem, but not the other way around. So attempting, trying, failing, and then succeeding builds self-efficacy, builds self-esteem, builds self-confidence. By telling somebody they're wonderful, but not allowing them to struggle, doesn't do the same. So let's go back to the educational thing. About 22% of grade 12 students scored proficient in mathematics. 22%, 1 out of 5, 2 out of 10, 20 out of 100. 35% scored proficient in reading. That means a vast majority of students, grade 12, did not either become competent in math or competent in reading as far as testing is concerned by the National Assessment of Educational Progress. At the same time, many employers report skill gaps in communication, critical thinking, and problem solving. The question whether degrees are worthless or not isn't really the question. The question is, how have these credentials become so popular, and are these credentials even a sign of competence? A diploma used to signal mastery of something. Today, many argue it's increasingly signaling simply participation, participation in something that's expected. Oh, you should go to college now. Whereas the competency, the struggle, the wanting to do it yourself and pushing yourself may be still there for many students, but for some it isn't. But their expectations are set by parents, guidance counselors, society, peers, you know, what's in the news, what's on social media. This will then create a dangerous expectation gap. I have a degree. I expect to have this level of compensation for the competency that I now have because I have a degree. But yet we have people who, not all, some, have lower competency that now have a degree that expect to be compensated for higher competency. It becomes a cyclical thing. Expectations are not met by reality. So this is the expectation gap. It's the gap between what you expect to have happen and reality. It's the same that happens in a relationship. You expect, you know, bright lights and fireworks and thunder and lightning in a relationship. You expect to have all this stuff that we see in movies, that we hear about on TV, that our friends tell us about and brag about, maybe in social media. And then you get into a relationship and maybe it's not there and you think, oh, this, something's wrong. The expectation was to have this wonderful stuff. It's like, you know, the 15-minute movie, the hour and a half romance novel and or movie. And you see that movie and you see like the love that's in it, and then your relationship's not like that, and you think, oh, it must not be a good relationship. The problem is we're set up for failure by having expectations beyond what reality is. This is also true in education. You go get your education, and now your expectation is you're going to get this high-paying job. And when that doesn't come to fruition, but what does come to fruition is that bill that you're going to be paying for the next 20 years. That's when reality hits you in the face like a wet fish on a Monty Python skit. So many young people were told, follow your passion. That's what you need to do. Get a degree. Success will follow. You can be anything you want. But the reality is you got student debt, housing costs, competitive job markets, and economic uncertainty. And potentially, you went to college for something that society isn't valuing the way that you were taught that it was going to. The result? Frustration, anxiety, resentment, angry at the government, angry at teachers, angry at parents, angry at the school system. Not because that life is necessarily worse because you did all that, but because expectations and reality drifted apart. So, have we accidentally inflated expectations while weakening the skills needed to achieve them? So, we've inflated expectations and we've lowered the skills that are necessary to obtain them.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. This next segment, we're going to be talking about the social comparison machine. Well, what's that? Psychologist Leon Festinger proposed social comparison theory, where we take our lives and compare them against family, friends, cousins, community, the people that we grew up with. So family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, we compare ourselves to them. So that's what historically we did, and that's how we kind of judge where we are in life. But today we compare ourselves to celebrities, influencers, millionaires, perfect bodies, perfect vacations, perfect relationships. The standards are set so high and so fake. And because we fail in comparison, we feel bad. Again, anxiety, frustration, depression, anger maybe even. Many teenagers spend more than 7 hours a day on social media. That's an incredible amount of time. Adults spend multiple hours daily on social media as well. The result, we compare our ordinary lives to the extraordinary highlights of other people, their highlight reels of their life, their vacation, their relationship, what they just did, what they just attained, their car, whatever it is. We look at their highlight reel from their social media account and we go, hey, I don't have that. I'm not there. I'm not succeeding like they are. And that's the problem, is that we're seeing that all over the place. And that is not reality. We're seeing things electronically that if we went out on the street, if we went face to face and met with people, we would not see the same thing. So the danger is not simply envy. It is distorted expectations. Are we evaluating our lives based upon reality or based on somebody else's carefully edited performance that they post on social media? So the personality experiment, let's see what that is. Psychologists often describe personality using the big five personality traits that appear across cultures and populations. So there's going to be five things. You can use the acronym OCEAN, O-C-E-A-N, and that's openness to experience, C, conscientiousness, E, extroversion, A, agreeableness, and then N, neuroticism. And let's go through those a little bit. So openness to experience would be something like how curious, imaginative, creative you are, and how willing somebody is to explore new ideas and new experiences. So high openness would be somebody who had qualities like this. They enjoy travel and new experiences. They like learning and exploring ideas. They're comfortable with change. They're curious about different perspectives. I'm not going to go into low. It's the opposite of that, of course. So let's look at examples. Examples would be one person books a trip to a country, to a country they've never been before. So they, I'm going to book a trip, but I'm going to go to, France. And it sounds exciting. But another will return to the same place year after year after year because they know exactly what to expect. That is openness to new experience. I want to expect the same thing, so I go to the same place. Or I really want to see new things all the time. That's one way to look at it. Conscientiousness is one of the big traits that dictate typically performance, how conscientious you are. Do you take responsibility for things? How disciplined, organized, dependable, and self-controlled somebody tends to be. That's what it is. So high conscientiousness is someone who plans ahead, meets deadlines, keeps commitments, and finishes what they start. And of course, low is the opposite of that. For example, one person starts preparing for a presentation 2 weeks in advance. Another begins working on it the night before. Now, some people can say procrastination, is that conscientious or not conscientious? And you would say, oh, it's not. So, I tend to fall into the category of waiting to the last minute to do things. And I don't know if that's high conscientiousness or not, but then I will focus on it to get it done. So I don't want to bring myself into this, but conscientiousness is how much responsibility you take to get something done when it needs to get done. No matter if you do it a week ahead of time or an hour ahead of time, but you get it done because you feel like you have to, rather than make an excuse of why you didn't. Extroversion. Now that is where somebody goes out and they are the talk of the town, the party, they're the person who goes out and wants to say hello to everyone. They want to greet everyone at the party. They're energized when they are out and meeting new people. Definitely in social interactions, right? And external stimulation just gets them very, very happy. And those who are opposite of extroversion, which is introversion, is the opposite. But let's talk about a couple of these things. High enjoyment when meeting new people, comfortable in groups, talkative and outgoing, gains energy from social activity, wants to stay engaged and stay at that party going on and on and on, where someone who may be introverted can be social, but they may say, after an hour, I just want to go home and be quiet right now. So, for example, after a party, like we just said, an extrovert feels the need to continue talking and meeting and going maybe to the diner afterwards or continuing to party in a different spot with people and just having fun social interaction, where the introvert enjoyed the party. It's time to go home. Agreeableness. So that's the fourth trait, the fourth personality trait. And remember, these are enduring traits. Typically, people are born with these traits generally, and they grow with them for their entire life. They endure throughout the lifetime. So if somebody is highly agreeable when they're younger, typically, unless something has impacted them dramatically, they stay highly agreeable when they get older. How cooperative they are, how compassionate they are, how trusting and relationship focused someone tends to be. That has to do with agreeableness. So they're empathetic, they're helpful, they're cooperative, and they value harmony. They try to get along with people. For example, somebody who is agreeable will be willingly helping coworkers to get something done with a project. Another who's not agreeable will say, hey, it's not my responsibility. You need to take care of it. You need to take care of that yourself. Why don't you get conscientious? Lastly, the N, neuroticism, which is kind of like people being neurotic, people being acting like just strangely moody, on edge, tendency to experience anxiety, worry, emotional instability, and negative emotions. They tell you one thing, do another. You feel stress when you're talking to them. You feel stress because they act nervously. They worry frequently. They're sensitive to stress. They experience stronger emotional reactions than what you would consider normal. They're more prone to anxiety. What's interesting about that is that there's a certain amount of being neurotic that's normal. And then there's the opposite. If you have like no neuroticism, like if you aren't neurotic at all, that's where the sociopath and psychopaths come from, where they have no worries. They're not sensitive to stress. They have almost no emotional reactions. And they aren't prone at all to anxiety, so they can do things that bother other people and it doesn't bother them in the least because they have no empathy for them. So let's go forward back to neuroticism. An example, two people receive criticism from their boss. One thinks about it for days and questions their own abilities. The other accepts the feedback, makes adjustments, and moves on. And that psychopath just says, I don't care. The boss doesn't know what they're talking about. I'm smarter than the boss, right? Or, hey, I am the boss. That's why I'm the psychopath. Finally, the big question here is the big five traits are partly influenced by genetics. So these are supposedly, again, resilient traits, traits that stay with you most of your life or through your life. But the expression of those traits depends heavily on the environment. So you have these traits that are tendencies, and depending on how you grow up, where you grow up, your friends, your family, and all that, these are how then you express, how you learn to express these traits. Just as two identical trees can vary different in their growth patterns based upon where they're planted, personality traits can grow depending on where they're available for growth. Meaning, somebody who is naturally an extrovert as a child but grows up in a very quiet household, in a very systematic religion, in a very quiet culture, structured culture, would tend to develop the extroversion to that level of their environment, where somebody who grows up in a household that has many brothers and sisters, that they're always doing something. There are people in and out of their house. They're doing parties at their home. They're going on vacations, that they're involved in school plays and different things, that they can have the same level of extroversion, but because they're exposed to different levels of environment, they can express the extroversion differently in their behavior. So the question for today's generation is, what happens when the environment that's shaping the personality is increasingly social media, influencers, algorithms, smartphones, and AI, rather than family, community, mentors, and face-to-face relationships? Are our personalities being influenced? And is the expression of our personalities being changed by this 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a day of social media, this new technology-driven experience, changing how we express our personality? Are we becoming different? Are we becoming completely influenced and changing the ways we relate to each other? And of course, the answer is yes. This may be one of the most important psychological questions of our time. The tree analogy that we talked about before, two oak trees. One grows in rich soil. The other grows in a rocky terrain with limited sunlight and water. Both are still oak trees, but one develops deep roots, a thick trunk, and broad canopy of leaves, leaves everywhere. The other one becomes tall and thin, looking for sunlight, sparse foliage because it doesn't have the nutrients in the soil, and is less stable because it's on rocky terrain and it can't find a place to set its roots. So again, they both have the same ability to express something that's inherent in them, but based upon the environment, one can be kept from growing in that area. The other one can be allowed to flourish in that area. The trait didn't change. They're both oak trees, so just call that a trait. The expression of that trait that makes it that mighty oak changed based upon the environment. In psychology, this is one of the most important distinctions. We may not be changing human nature in itself. We may be changing how human nature develops and expresses itself. So let's talk about one example for trait extroversion. There's two children. One grew up with family dinners, with sports teams, with church groups, with clubs, face-to-face friendships, community activities. As an adult, that child may now, they're an extrovert, they may strive for leadership. They may have strong communication skills. They may have confidence, emotional intelligence from dealing with so many different people on that level, and they may have a large social network. So now I have another child that has high extroversion, but their environment is 7 hours a day of daily screen time on their phone, heavy social media use, seeing what others are doing and they're not, online validation of their being, hey, thumbs up, hey, thumbs up, they're posting pictures of people who are doing this. So their social life is giving them validation, although reality isn't there giving them that same thing. Influencer culture, they're growing up in that culture of being influenced by the influencers. And finally, they have limited face-to-face interaction, that it's all online. So how do they grow up and how do they express extroversion? They may be attention-seeking. Hey, see me, because no one is actually paying attention and they're seeing how to get attention on social media. They may be validation-seeking. You know, those thumb-up things give we release a little bit of brain chemicals that make us feel pleasure when we get a thumbs up. We have the fear of missing out, potentially, if we grew up in that environment. We may have social comparison as a way that we are checking out, you know, where we are. And then finally, they may have anxiety when disconnected. Now they want that extroversion. The only thing close to extroversion is connecting online. And when that phone's put away, they have anxiety. So the underlying trait may be similar, but the expression is different.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. When just before we went away, we were talking about how social media and other things, the environment we're raised in, impacts our personality traits and impacts how we are and behave as adults. So for most of human history, the environment shaping personality consisted primarily of family, community, school, work, religion, face-to-face relationships, being out and about, our neighborhood, the friends that we had, the family, our environment. Those environments taught social skills, right? Conflict resolution, resilience, accountability, and emotional regulation. Today, many young people spend more time with smartphones, social media, algorithms, influencers, and AI systems. And we're going to start talking about AI in a little bit here, too. Some studies suggest teenagers spend 7 hours or more per day on screens outside of schoolwork. That's 1-2 hours with parents, 1 hour with friends in person outside of school, and then 7 hours on social media. So 70% of the time that they're not in school, they're on social media. Who's shaping the environment? Is it the parents? Is it the teachers? Is it the community? Or is it the algorithms that are trying to keep them having contact with different things that are going on their smartphone. You know, they like something, they're going to be shown more of what they like, that they're going to start expressing more of what they already liked, because that's what's giving the feedback. The algorithm's giving them the feedback of, I like this, so now I'm going to see more of this. And so now they start developing more and more in that area, in that direction. And that's 70% of their time. Now, they can have connection with other people on social media while they're doing that, but a lot of that is also day after day after day. That's the training they're getting. So if environment influences the expression of personality, and psychology strongly suggests that it does, then we may be witnessing the largest personality shaping, I was going to say altering, right? Personality shaping or altering experiment in human history, and not one that we actually set up as an experiment. Not because human nature changed, no, because the big five personality traits didn't suddenly disappear, but because the environment surrounding human nature has changed. So nature has changed, not the nature we're born with, but the nature that's creating the nurture around our development and growth. And if the environment shapes behavior, then changing the environment ultimately changes culture, relationship, families, and society itself. We're moving towards a completely different society that's based upon the way society that's today, or the environment of today, is shaping society. So we're being shaped by society, and we're shaping society based upon how we're being shaped. It's a circular spiral. The question isn't whether personality matters. What happens? This is the question. What happens when the most powerful influence in a young person's life is no longer family, no longer community, no longer experience and relationships? What happens when it becomes devices and algorithms designed to capture and hold attention? Well, I'm thinking it's not going to be very good. Let's think of how dating's been impacted by this. You know, you're stuck on these social media, you're stuck on the electric devices, and now people are getting into dating. What's happening now? The culture is changing, right? If culture is changing personality, we should see evidence in dating. What's going on in dating that's different? Across the world, young adults increasingly discuss stuff as effort is attractive again. So this is something in the news, right? So for dating, people are valuing effort. When somebody makes small, consistent effort in a relationship, it's being valued. People are talking about it. People are saying, hey, Johnny, every day he calls me and sees how I'm doing. He's bringing me a little bit of this. He's bringing me a tiny gift. Whatever it is, it's effort. It's something other than just a quick hi on a text message. That there's follow through, there's communication, there's consistency and reliability. These things are being valued. Authenticity has become valuable because it has become scarce. So what's interesting is there's almost a pushback to social media by saying, hey, I need to show consistency outside of social media in my connection with the person that I'm dating. There's some radical clarity now. This is another thing. People are being upfront in their relationships. What are my marriage goals? What is my relationship goals? What's my family goals? What are my long-term intentions? People don't want to waste time. They want to be really clear and really accurate upfront. This is a new thing. I think electronic media helps you do that too, because you can share that with many people, as well as share it with the people you're interested in. Quickly. Here's my background. You can look at my social media account. But when I get to see you and talk to you and have that date, I can be upfront with you because I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to have a bad relationship, because we do have a lot of knowledge now. Fear of vulnerability. That is also something that we're seeing, that people are now, you know, people who have been hiding behind that electronic, the phone or the computer, they've been hiding behind the screen. Now they come out and they're fearful. They have this vulnerability because now they're exposing themselves. Many relationships fail not because of conflict, but because people have the knowledge that intimacy requires risk. And there's something called the pufferfish syndrome or something like that, where the pufferfish blows itself up because it's scared. So it makes itself like really puffy because it doesn't want other fish to come near it. So it tries to, so this is where, you know, somebody just wants to hide. So they start having a relationship and now they're fearful of the intimacy. So they go into hiding. They basically ghost somebody. The closer people become, the more some will retreat from the relationship. Therapy, language everywhere. That's another trait that people are talking about, stuff like trauma, boundaries, attachment, narcissism. Not that they're also talking about it in the correct way, but a lot of terms get thrown around, like, hey, Johnny's a narcissist. Susie, she's a psychopath. And people are being labeled, but people are discussing these things more so, and they're discussing them on social media with their friends. These terms have entered everyday conversations, and this is new. Awareness without accountability, though, can become excuse-making. That, hey, I'm aware of this, that I act this way, but you know what? I have no accountability because everyone tells me how great I am. Anyway, leaving the apps. People are leaving the apps. That's a good sign that people are getting off the apps. And this is, again, a trend around the world. Many singles report leaving them. They seek activities, communities, friend groups and face-to-face interactions, maybe getting into a hiking club or a sewing club or a cooking club, doing something face-to-face to meet people. Do you notice the pattern between all these things? Notice the irony that many of the most viral relationship discussions in the world today, viral relationships discussion online, are not about getting more technology into the relationship, but actually recovering intimacy, authenticity, effort, commitment, vulnerability, and genuine human connection. People are not asking for more technology now. They're asking for more humanity. That's a good thing. Let's talk about resilience question. Psychologist Angela Duckworth, and she wrote a book, I believe it's called Grit, studied grit, and she talked about how intelligence is not the most determining factor in success, but grit, the ability to go after something, and when you fail, get back and do it again and do it again and go after it. It's like the football team that they're down, they're behind by a point or a score, and they dig in and they work harder and they just keep pushing ahead until they win. They go back the next week and practice, and they practice harder, that they don't give up. It's developed through failure, rejection, competition, responsibility, and adversity. So that builds resilience. But if that's taken away, if failure, rejection, competition, responsibility, and adversity is taken away, it's hard to build the resilience by overcoming that. Today, many systems increase the removal of this, or they're increasing the removal of discomfort. So we're creating things in schools that we don't want students to feel discomfort. We don't want them to get a bad grade. So we kind of help them. We put them in groups, and the group passes or fails rather than the student. So the group passes. Great. Everyone passes in the group. We don't want anybody to feel like they're not passing. People get participation trophies. That was a big thing a number of years ago. There's reduced accountability. So reduced individual accountability. Immediate gratification. Hey, let's all go to the Dairy Queen, even though we lost. The Dairy Queen's a place you get ice cream, by the way, for those who aren't familiar with the Dairy Queen. The question is not whether kindness is good. The question is, if we remove struggle, do we also remove opportunities to build resilience? Because muscle strengthens under stress. It struggles under resistance. The same with our brains, that character also develops under stress, right? It's a reaction to it. It's not the stress, but it's the overcoming of it that helps build a stronger resilience. No one develops confidence by proving life is easy. Confidence develops when people repeatedly discover that they can handle difficult things.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took how she found her match? It is in the book.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. What Albert Bandura has talked about is that overcoming challenges builds self-efficacy. It builds self-confidence. People become confident by doing difficult things. They don't become confident by doing easy things. Mastery and confidence come from achieving things that would be difficult. Running a mile continuously without stopping. Well, you know what? If I used to run 3 miles a day and then all of a sudden I start running 1 mile a day, that's doesn't build my confidence in that I'm able to run. But if I've never run before in my life and I push myself to accomplish 1 mile, I can feel that I've accomplished something and I have confidence that now I can maybe go to the next achievement. So it's confidence builds upon confidence, or builds upon overcoming some challenge, a new challenge, right? It's not merely achieved by being encouraged. Oh, come on, you can do it, Jimmy. You can do it. You can run that mile. No, you get that confidence when you've run the mile, not when someone tells you you can do it. I want to climb that hill. I've tried to climb it. I just can't get up it. I can't figure out how to get the rope in that spot. I can't figure out how to go back over a little bit of a ledge. It's really difficult for me. I've tried it. I've struggled. Finally, I do it. And I feel I've accomplished something and I've done it on my own. If someone just says, oh, here you do, and they pick you up and put you on the top of the hill, you don't feel that if you have accomplished it. Now, we can talk about physical things like that, climbing the mountain, you know, scaling the side of the mountain. When you do it yourself, you build confidence. If somebody just brings you in a helicopter and puts you on top of the hill and say, okay, you're at top of the hill, guess what? You did that. You don't feel any confidence. I want to learn how to run a marathon. I can't feel bad that I haven't run a marathon yet. I need to feel good that I'm making it past these little milestones, okay? You know what? In 2 months, I want to be able to run 5 miles. In 6 months, I want to be able to run 12 miles. That if you have these milestones and these goals and you achieve them on the schedule that you're looking for, it starts to build your confidence. And that's what we're looking for, whether it's, again, physical activity or mental activity. Again, the goal should be increased capability each time. Mental capability, physical capability. Neuroplasticity and AI. This is where this whole show started for me today. I was thinking that we're in this perfect storm, the perfect storm of we have documented reduction in, just slightly, in intelligence testing scores, in math, in English and reading. So we have documented we're doing a little bit worse than we used to do. We have documented that people don't need to put in the effort because they're being rewarded without the effort, participation trophies. So now I don't have the competence I used to have. I don't want to put the effort in and I'm used to getting reward. Here comes AI, which will do not only the work for me, but it will also do the thinking. Is that an easy way for us to offload more effort and assure ourselves that we're not going to face challenges? And without facing the challenges, we're not going to develop those strengths, those capabilities, those self-confidence and self-efficacy. Neuroplasticity means that the brain changes according to repeated use, especially challenges. So well, just like muscles grow, the brain grows in the direction that we have challenges, challenges in thought, challenges in writing, challenges in math, challenges in science, challenges in learning something new. That as we learn, say, music, we start learning the piano and we're struggling with it, but we start getting it. Our brain is growing, but we need to struggle. Practice, problem solving, emotional regulation, delayed gratification, and perseverance. Get that grit going, and we will strengthen that within ourselves. if we repeatedly outsource memory, I don't have to remember that. I can just look it up on Google. I can just use AI. Navigation, I'm just going to use GPS. I'm never going to figure out these roads myself. Writing, I'll just have somebody write for me. I'll just, you know, put it in and say, hey, clean this up, write this note for me. Research, write this paper for me. Analysis, analyze this for me. If we allow AI to do this, what happens? AI introduces a completely new question. Previous technologies amplified effort. Technology in the past was there to amplify the effort we put in. We would learn how to use a calculator, learn how to use a computer, and we could get more effort out. So as we learn different subjects, we could then amplify what we were able to do in those subjects by using the technology. AI, on the other hand, replaces the effort. So instead of amplifying, it takes over the effort. So every previous technology largely amplified what we did. The human effort was amplified. It was leveraged. AI is the first widely available technology that can increasingly replace portions of human cognitive effort. And when our effort is replaced, we don't make the effort. We don't use it. We lose it. We don't challenge it. We don't gain it. We don't gain the strength because we're not pushing ourselves past challenges. Will AI become a cognitive exoskeleton, right, that strengthens us, that we can use, you know, like that, the army, the exoskeleton that the you see in sci-fi movies where the scientist or somebody's in this thing and it offers more strength and it amplifies their physical and maybe mental abilities, like Iron Man's suit? Or will AI become a cognitive wheelchair? Basically, we just say, I want to go in this direction, but it's doing everything. It's calculating. It's doing everything for us, and we're just kind of doing nothing but sitting in the wheelchair. It pushes us around. So is it an exoskeleton, which protects us and amplifies us, or is it a wheelchair, which limits our ability to do anything? We don't have to walk. It moves for us. Will it make us more capable, or simply make capability less necessary? We don't have to be capable because AI will do it for us. The problem I see, and I've seen this in writing papers, I've seen this in doing research, is that AI will be wrong. And if you don't know the information yourself, you won't know AI is wrong. And we start diluting information with wrong information at an ever-increasing rate. And competency has to be a piece with AI. We need to have the knowledge that allows AI to do what it's good for, to do things that it can really help with. Organization, cleaning up writing, maybe finding resources and references. But then you have to go in and look at that and go, is that right? Is it actually supporting of what I'm saying? Let me read the paper and see if it analyzed it correctly. But it's almost like having a friend work with you, not do the work for you. It's somebody there to say, hey, I can help you, but you need to still be able to understand when it's right, when it's wrong, and how to use it well. And that's going to be, I believe, the biggest struggle right now, moving on with society as AI has taken over for more and more of our effort. So now the relationships we talked about, that healthy relationships require qualities that technology cannot provide. Patience, sacrifice, emotional regulation, delayed gratification, commitment, and resilience. Apps cannot provide those. So social media cannot provide those. AI cannot provide those. The future of relationships may depend upon whether we continue developing human qualities that technology can never replace. Have we built a world optimized for comfort, convenience, and validation while quietly abandoning the experiences that build competence, confidence, resilience, character, meaning, and lasting love? Have we taken on convenience and lost competency? We may be silently moving in that direction. That ninja may be sneaking up on us. The good news, if we recognize that we have had a loss of effort and then go to gain and regain effort, if we've recognize that sometimes we've fallen into participation rather than mastery. We want to master the subject rather than just participate in a group and let somebody else do the work. And finally, we got to recognize that we don't want to outsource human capability. We want to amplify human capability through technology, not replace it. If we can recognize those things, there is potentially a bright future with AI, with social media, with humans on Earth, and we're not going to lose competency as we gain convenience. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate. Thank you for watching. Hopefully we all learned something this week. See you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.